Elephant, rhinoceros, water buffalo, lion, and leopard. What do these animals have in common? These five mammals make up Africa's Big Five list, which accounts for the most difficult animals to hunt in Africa. They're big, they're deadly, and they're vicious to bring down. But these animals are arguably not the most deadly. In fact, the most deadly animal in Africa doesn't even make the list, and often the actual numbers of damage this animal lays claim to is blamed on other, more logical occurrences. Animals like the crocodile or sharks or a simple drowning had to have been the cause. No matter where you turn in Africa, you have to watch your back. Because, like a rocket launching itself from the depths of the river, it can snatch you out of the air and nearly swallow you whole. And today, I'm going to tell you the story of a man who survived being swallowed by a hippo.
Dun dun dun.
Welcome to Tragedy with a View.
Sorry, I interrupted your.
That's okay.
I had to add the dramatic effect.
You do very good at adding the dramatic effects.
Chris says that I'm possibly viral meme worthy with my finger wag.
You potentially are. We just got to get it in front of the right audience.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting big animals, hippos. Underappreciated, not underappreciated, but underestimated for sure. It's like, oh, it's a big giant that's lovely. And it's like, no, it's super violent.
Well, I mean, if you think of Fiona, I think was her name, the baby hippo that like she was viral when she was born because she was this tiny little thing and cute. You just want to snuggle her, but they're just ginormous creatures that you don't necessarily think could or like would attack you, but
Yeah,
this.
it's actually something interesting that I was discussing previously this week is just the idea of creatures that are the same size or larger than you, and like the psychological fear that that just like immediately gives you. It's like, oh, a bear. It's like two times my, or like they just, you really don't understand how much more powerful and big it is, and you just immediately are scared of it. It's like if a spider was your size, you would literally, you would just, it's just the idea of the size of a creature and its effect on your fear receptors, even if you know what it is. It's like people are scared of horses, and it's because they're big.
So many people are scared of horses.
Yeah.
And I saw, interestingly, I saw a meme not that long ago. Ben had kind of talked a little bit about, being scared of horses because, they bite and they kick. And I saw a meme out there that's like, non-horse people are scared of horses because they bite and they kick, and they have this wrong assumption that horse people have lacked those experiences. That maybe they haven't been kicked or maybe they haven't been bit, but in the reality is we've experienced so much worse when it comes to horses. The biting and the kicking is like entry level stuff. And horses are another animal that you would never think, oh, they would attack me, except that they would. My name is Kayla and I am your host.
And I'm Sam,
And Sam's with me.
the hearty co-host.
The hardy co-host, also known as my fiance, and he gets roped into all of the
I
last minute
don't get roped.
episodes.
I choose to be here.
He does. Two things. One, this episode is going to be nice and short and sweet because it's, let me take that back. It's going to be nice and short and not so sweet. I'm sick and I think I'm finally over the hump of it.
I got her sick.
Sam got me sick.
Yeah.
And between running the race last weekend and then getting sick the next day, my energy has just been next to none. So
But Kayla is dedicated to providing you with consistent bi-weekly entertainment. So here we are.
here we are, and I'm getting this in last minute possible Sunday afternoon, Gonna have it up on Patreon for people there to get it early, and it'll be everywhere else Wednesday. Speaking of Patreon, starting in 2024, you're going to get exclusive episodes for Patreon members once a month. On the first of the month, that episode will be released, even if the first falls on a Wednesday that I'm releasing a typical episode. If that's the case,
Double feature.
you're gonna get two. So I've got that coming down the line. Still planning for January 1. I want to try to get like 2 to 3 more episodes figured out. And then I'm gonna give myself a hard date
And
to.
let me tell you, of the ones that she's told me about thus far, they're spicy
I've got
and not so sweet.
I'm sitting next to a stack of 1, 2, 4, 6, 8 books.
That's a lot.
8 books that are gonna be used between. I mean, they're not dedicated to Patreon episodes, but there's 8 stories there. As soon as I have them ready for you, you'll have them. Okay, we're gonna get going on this episode before my voice gives out. Also, if you hear any background noises, if it sounds like there's a child counting or screaming, stomping, I have to do this in the same house as my child today, so.
I think you should just insert those sounds just randomly throughout.
I don't think I'm going to need to. He's going to do it for me. All right, so today we are going to Victoria Falls, which is a waterfall system that lays about halfway down the Zambezi River in Africa. And the Victoria Falls are at the border of Zambia, which is to the north of the falls, and then Zimbabwe, which is to the south. For reference of size, Victoria Falls is about twice the size of Niagara Falls in both width and depth.
Oh my gosh, that's huge.
And the Zambezi River is the fourth longest river in Africa, and it ends in the Indian Ocean. In 1855, British explorer David Livingstone was the first European to see these falls. And he named them after Queen Victoria in the United Kingdom. And then surrounding the falls and the river is Victoria Falls National Park, which is in Zimbabwe to the south. And then to the north in Zambia is the Masai Altunia National Park.
I'm sure that's exactly how you say it.
I got as close as I could. Because of this huge water source, many different types of animals are able to be found in this area, especially hippos, because they are land and water-dwelling creatures, so they need that constant source of water as well as land for their food and vegetation. So they're seemingly only aggressive in the water because they absolutely need that water. They are unable to sweat, and the water is how they cool down. And if they stay in the sun too long, their skin starts to dry out, and it can cause them to overheat, and it will kill them.
That's a weird animal trait. It's like you got dogs. Reptiles don't sweat, right?
No, but they're cold-blooded, so they use the sun to heat up. To warm themselves.
I wonder why that is very odd. I wonder why animals don't sweat. Or it. I mean, this is now. Well, this is my only. I only have two instances. You got dogs and then hippos. But I'm sure that because of this difference between, like, the dog you have in your house and hippos in Africa, like, I'm assuming that there's other animals like that. It's not the only two.
I don't think cats sweat.
We're bringing here the fake news. No animals sweat.
No, horses sweat.
Okay.
horses
Dang.
sweat
Debunked.
um
Some animals sweat.
some animals sweat. So in we're going to go back to March of 1996. Paul Templer was 27 years old and was working as a kayak guide as well as the operator for Frontier Tours in the Victoria Falls area. They would lead safaris with, so there was like one main guide, which is what Paul typically acted as. And then they would have kind of apprentice guides who would be in the canoes with their guests. And they kind of marketed this idea that you would get to go on a safari, but you wouldn't have to do any of the work because those guides would be the ones who are doing all of the manual labor to move the canoe in and out of areas where you need to go. And these tours would typically last 3 hours. And on this particular day, he had three other canoes with him. So six tourists, four boats. Paul was in one. And then they had two tourists and one apprentice guide in the three other boats.
Sounds like some luxury tours here. You got two people per boat. Jeez, what is this, like a small boat? Is
It's a
there any
canoe.
pictures?
It's a canoe.
So, okay.
Yeah, it's not a boat. I'm calling it a boat because I don't know. That's what I wrote down.
Canoe, kayak, got it.
Canoe. Different than kayak.
Well, I know. I
But
just like that sort of
yeah,
activity.
that size of a vessel. The guides that were with him were Mike McNamara, who was 31, Ben Simbanda, 24, and Evans Namasango, who was 22. As a guide, he felt that one of his jobs was to immerse clients in nature and wildlife while also keeping them apart. And in one particular interview, he had to physically stop a group from walking up to a pride of lions to take pictures.
Great. Wow. Why are some people so smart? Do it for the gram. For the
Yeah,
gram.
I mean, I think,
They're not real. That's why they're taking pictures.
yeah, so I think there's like this false assumption when you go on a tour in Africa and like they're practically guaranteeing that you see the animals. I think there's this false assumption that it's kind of like when you enter a zoo, that these animals are used to people. They might be used to people, but they also, you know, animals in the zoo are relying on these people to care for them and feed them, and they're kind of trained in certain ways. And, you know, they make it as safe and comfortable for both animal and human inside of zoos as possible. Safaris are not the same. And I think there's a false assumption that.
Well, I mean, that's all you ever know. You know a zoo, so I mean, it's not a hard reach for to be
Right.
like, oh, it's just a zoo. It's basically the same,
But
but you make some interesting points.
yeah, but you know, the safari animals are wild animals. You are entering into their territory. You're figuring out where they are at, and you're pulling people in to see them, which is kind of the basis of this story here. I did not see anywhere where they specifically were advertising that they were going to see animals. It sounded, from my understanding, that this was more of like a nature landscape, see the Victoria Falls type of a thing. However, they would typically include in their warnings to keep your hands inside of the boat and don't trail them in the water because of crocodiles. And if you trailed your hand in the water, it almost mimicked how fish move along the top of the water, and they didn't want a crocodile to come up and try to grab you. But they also mentioned that hippos tend to be territorial, but they'll just kind of bump into the canoe if you end up getting too close for comfort in their mind. Closing out the conversation about hippos, Paul or whoever was leading the guide would often say something along the lines of, because they're territorial, we know what areas to avoid, but a big hit could dump you into the water. If that happens, don't panic. Hippos won't eat you, they're vegetarians.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
However, Paul was well aware of one bull hippo in particular who had been acting out aggressively, and Paul was keeping track of where he was so that way he could avoid that specific area. And this hippo had already dumped Paul and two other guides into the water on other safari groups or other safari tours, and other tour excursions in the area were also starting to kind of have this particular hippo as like a hey, we need to stay far away from this guy. And they were starting to have conversations throughout the entire area. It
He
wasn't,
was becoming infamous.
yeah, so like all of the tour excursion groups in the area were having conversations about like, oh, we saw him over here on
Does
this
he have a
day.
na nickname?
Not that I saw.
Darn. I bet you he did.
Hungry, hungry hippo. I'm a mom. Leave me alone.
It's a fun game. We have it.
So the talking about where this particular hippo was on any given day. So in addition to knowing the whereabouts of the hippos, guides would also hit their canoes with their oars to encourage animals under the water to stay back. Before they were heading out, they had a general idea of where this hippo in particular was, and they were like, okay, because we know that he's here, we're going to avoid that area. What they didn't know was that he had moved. So instead of going into an area that should have been safe, they basically went right into the area that he was. So, what are you smiling about?
I would just like to inform the audience that the Hungry Hungry Hippos all have a name, and their names are Lizzie, Henry, Homer, and Harry. Now we can get back to the story.
Okay. Okay, so they were going right into
This guy
his
sounds like a
territory.
Homer. Homer.
He kind of does. We'll call him Homer.
Homer. Homer the hippo.
So as they converged above Victoria Falls, Paul heard a ton of splashing and commotion behind him. Paul turns around and he sees canoe on the back of this hippo that just launched himself out of the water. The guests were clinging to the sides of the canoe, and Evans, who was the guide in this particular canoe, had fallen out into the water. Paul, at this moment, realized that this hippo was this same
It
problem.
was Homer.
It was Homer. It was the problem bull hippo that everyone had been having negative experiences with. And in an attempt to get everyone out of the area, he started yelling directions while also turning his boat toward the hippos because, as the main tour
The
guide,
hippo?
no, they travel in like herds. So
Okay.
this bull hippo has a whole bunch of females with him, which is one of the reasons why he's
His
so aggressive.
harem.
Sure. I don't know what a group of hippo is called. You're gonna look it up. So he's got this herd of females with him, which is part of the reason why he's so aggressive. Paul turns towards the hippos because as his role in the owner operator lead guide, it's also his job to get people out of the water when they fall in. So this is a relatively simple task, but it's also very risky. Bull hippos are upwards of 16 and a half feet in length and weigh up to
16 feet. Oh my Lord.
5,860 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
They are also, I'm going to call them prey animals. I don't think they're preyed on as normal, like gazelles. If they're injured and already dying, they're going to have someone come over and finish off the job. However, well, that plays into one of the roles why they're so aggressive is because, you know, they gotta attack first, ask questions later type of a thing. They also have very short eyesight and already have very short tempers. And there's been instances where a bird has landed on the back of a hippo and it's caused the hippo to kind of jump a bit, and that caused a fight between that particular hippo and the hippo that was close to it.
Sounds like a rhino.
A bull hippo also has two teeth in the center of his lower jaw that are 8 inches, they grow up to 8 inches long. So, like sticking straight out from their mouths are two teeth. And then they have their canine teeth that are on the top of their jaw that curve down, and the canine teeth on the bottom jaw that curve up. And these canine teeth, the bottoms in particular, can grow as long as 18 inches. And because of the way that they fit together, they kind of file against each other as it opens and closes its mouth. And this creates edges on them that are as sharp as knives. Paul paddles over to Evans, reached out his hand to grab a hold of Evans when there was another loud commotion of splashing. And next thing Paul knew, it was black. The hippo had launched out of the water between Paul and Evans and first grabbed Paul head first and around the chest, and one of those teeth pierced into Paul's armpit.
That's not a good location. There's a vein in there.
There is a vein in there. So he started to bleed, and the hippo kind of like let go, but then clamped down again. But this time, Paul was in like completely inside of the hippo's mouth. He could feel the jaw around his waist and lower back, and he said that specifically there was a ton of pressure on his low back, probably from the top jaw pressing down. Paul is 6 foot tall, 200 pounds.
This was not a small person.
This is not a small person. This is not me fitting inside of a hippo.
This animal is very large.
This animal is ginormous. I think we've probably all seen them at the zoo. So, top half of him is completely inside of the hippo. His arms are pinned to his sides, and he was completely unable to fight back as the hippo dove down 12 feet to the bottom of this river. The plus side is that adrenaline starts kicking in, and adrenaline changes things, and it can make you superhuman strong and pay attention to details that you had no idea things were coming.
Hold your breath longer.
This is one of those instances where time seemed to slow down. He was able to process things at a superhuman speed and figure out how to do things. He was able to hold his breath longer, but one of the things that he figured out was that if he held onto the tusks, it would prevent them from piercing into him too far or farther than what
You know, it's like a wedge.
it normally would. So as this hippo had drug Paul under the water and just was like tearing into him, it was like thrashing him around and then it would spit him out and then it would grab him again and thrash him around some more. And this ordeal lasted for about 3.5 minutes.
That is a really long time and probably ended in like a 10-7 round for the hippo.
I have no idea what that means.
If you're a fight fan, you'll know that that is very one-sided.
Oh, for sure. Oh yeah, there was only one attacker
He
here.
survived the round, though. That's
He
what's important.
survived the round. So then the hippo lets go and Paul makes his way to the surface. From there, he could see that Evans was treading water and looking pretty panicked. I would too, quite honestly. If I was stuck in the water and I saw someone who I trusted get swallowed by a hippo and then get pulled under the water, I would also be panicking. Paul yells for Evans to go to the side, but Evans is just not responding at this point. And
Justifiably so.
so Paul swims towards him, grabs him, and
He jumped into the water?
he's still in the water. At this
No,
point, Paul is
Paul.
still in the water. So
What a
Paul
brave dude.
swims towards him and starts towing. He grabs a hold of Evans and starts towing him towards the dry land.
Gave him the good old combat swimmer side stroke rescue.
But the hippo was not done, and he grabs Paul by the legs and drug him back under the water again. Again, they are fighting, they're
Again,
thrashing.
or I thought
This
he
is.
grabbed Evans.
No, he grabbed Paul. Paul grabbed Evans and started swimming. Hippo grabs Paul.
Well, Evans was the one that was originally eaten.
No, Paul was the one who was originally eaten. Evans was in the canoe that was on the back of the hippo and fell into the water.
So Evans is
So,
just here chilling. The guy gets eaten by a hippo and then goes and rescues someone.
Evans has not been inside of the hippo.
Not
Paul has.
yet.
The hippo grabs a hold of Paul by his legs and again pulls him under the water and starts doing the same thing. He's thrashing him about, spitting him out, grabbing him again, thrashing him around. And the hippo was perceiving Paul and this group of people as a threat, right? Paul is getting the message loud and clear and is just trying to get out of there. So he's not really doing anything to, like, quote unquote, fight back. He might land a punch on the hippo, but to be entirely fair, I'm not sure that's actually doing much.
Yeah, I don't think that's doing much.
So the hippo lets go of Paul a second time. Paul makes it to the surface, and it's just enough time for him to get a gulp of air before the hippo clamped down, this time around his ribs. And
From his, so
so
grabbing
his,
him from the side?
no, from the bottom. So Paul's
His
legs
legs?
and waist
Oh,
are
man.
inside of the hippo. So first half started out in the hippo. This time it's the bottom half. Now, locationally wise, they're in more shallow water. So as the hippo's tossing him around, his head is kind of like getting dunked in and out of the water. And all of a sudden, a stream of blood shoots from Paul's side, and the hippo lets go. What they weren't aware of at this point was that the hippo sliced an artery in half.
Wow, that's surprising.
Paul's head was gashed and his cheek was split open, but when he was tossed kind of far enough in the right direction, Mike, who was one of the other, like, apprentice guys in one of the other boats, was close enough that he was able to grab him and haul him to shore. Down the river, they could see Evans, and he had put his arms up and was, like, waving at them. And it was at this point that the hippo launched himself out of the water and landed on top of Evans. On shore, Mike starts triaging Paul because he is trained in wilderness medical care, and he immediately notices that Paul's upper left arm was crushed and clearly broken in two places. The lower part of his arm had the flesh pulled away from the bone, and he had additional wounds on his chest, his back. His left foot was smashed to a pulp-like mess, and there was a puncture wound in his back that was so large that he could see a lung.
Oh, good.
Mike is extremely well trained, and he started having people open up all of the packaged food that they had brought with them and use the wrappers to pack and seal the holes in Paul's chest and back, which helped to prevent his lungs from collapsing or filling with blood.
That's some quick thinking there for sure.
That is something to just put a pin in that. You might need that someday.
I hope not.
I hope not also. I hope nobody listening to this ever needs to know that information. But it's there if you do. Meanwhile, Ben, who was the third guide with them, got into his canoe and started paddling towards, like, the landing that they came from, upriver against the current, and made it to their landing. Well, it wasn't actually their landing. He found a different landing. He made it there in 6 minutes, and he pulled off at this particular landing because he noticed that a local medical rescue team was running some emergency drills, and they were able to help get to Paul faster than what anybody else would have.
That is very convenient and fortunate.
Very fortunate. They were able to assist in getting Paul to the local hospital, but unfortunately, this hospital did not have a surgeon. But at this hospital, they were able to stabilize him enough to survive the 270-mile or 435-kilometer trip to a larger hospital where he arrived at 1 a.m. In all, it took about 8 hours from the time when Paul was attacked to when he arrived at the first hospital and received pain meds. So that entire 8 hours prior to that, he was on his own for pain management.
That would be very unfortunate.
Paul was extremely lucky. The artery in his side that had been sliced was so cleanly sliced that it sealed itself. And if it had not done that, Paul would have bled out in under a minute. And then, second, the wounds to his back were, they were at the perfect angle to create a flap that helped to keep the air from rushing out of his lungs, and it prevented his lungs from collapsing. The surgery, once he was at the second hospital, lasted 7 hours, and they patched up, quote, his 39 major wounds.
Only 7 hours. I'm kind of impressed.
7 hours to
Well,
do
seven
that
hours sounds short.
is short. I agree. 39 wounds that needed surgical attention.
Phew.
That's a lot.
That's a
That's a
lot.
lot to go through. And unfortunately, his left arm was so damaged that they just immediately amputated it. They basically said there's no, nothing to repair there. Evan's body was later found downriver, and while he had no signs of being viciously attacked as Paul had, it was clear that he died by drowning.
So he did end up dying.
He did end up dying.
Yeah. Hippos are vicious.
They are.
Before talking about hospitals, if you want to see something really cool, Mark Roper is a YouTube person, and he did a video about really cool. They use drones to transport blood across Africa, like really quick.
Oh.
It's super. I think it's in Ghana or something.
Okay.
And basically, the hospitals will request certain types of blood, and then they every 90 seconds they send a new plane out. They like slingshot them, and it transports the blood. They airdrop it, and then it turns around and then goes back.
That's pretty cool.
It's super cool.
That is. One thing that I do want to note about Evans in particular is, and for, other information, I'm going to remind everyone that the Victoria Falls are much larger than Niagara Falls. And I know that there have been a variety of people who have tried to go over Niagara Falls and survive it. And one of the really difficult parts about surviving going over Niagara Falls is that the height of it causes so much down. And I am not a water scientist person, so if I am using wrong words for this, I apologize. When the water is hitting as it comes over the falls and it hits that like base layer, the force downward is so strong that it'll just like keep things pulled down there. And it's not the actual going over the falls that's deadly. It's the very likely potential that you're not going to come up before you run out of air. Because of how, and they didn't really go into details, everything that I found about Evans didn't really go into details about how or where he was found. But I'm going to assume that if you're going to go over a waterfall that's larger than Niagara Falls, it's probably going to have the same sort of effect at the bottom there. And there's potential that he did get away from the hippo and
So they were on the top side.
they were on the top side.
Oh.
The clear signs of drowning, that's kind of what my mind goes to. Of course, also, once your adrenaline kind of runs out, your body is pretty depleted of energy. And if you stay in the water, it's not a good situation. I mean, it was not a good situation at all for Evans or Paul. Paul got away with his life, though.
Yeah, that would suck either way. I'm getting killed by a hippo or getting drowned under a waterfall. Those are not the ways I want to go.
Yeah, if anyone's curious, Paul Templer is now, I think he does some like motivational speaking. He does some specific work with children and amputees and, kind of coming back from a really negative experience, turning a really unfortunate situation into something that he
Turning
can.
lemons into lemonade.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that he can, talk to other people about and help them, find the positives in really crappy situations, which I think is important. But that's what I got. Thanks for listening.
Bye.